Happy Friday.
How you guys doing?
I'm good. How about you guys?
Good.
Have a good day.
Yeah. Hey, we got a guest today, Brian.
Hey, guys.
Brian Dougal.
Very special guest.
I'm going to let you introduce yourself in just a little bit.
Okay.
And then Leah and I.
Yeah, I'm filling in for
knocking it out.
Max Cherno. He's going out there doing the deed and making all of us proud.
I know. I think what old Max Cherno is doing about a month TAD between AHARS and HAI and what else?
Stan visit
coming up.
Yeah, he's going to San Fran.
Yep. And of course, I think Uncle Rob is also away this week. So
Hog hunting in Texas?
I think so.
Out of a helicopter. Yeah, helicopter. Ironically.
I know.
Him and Chuck Mineo.
Dude, that's the coolest thing.
Oh, I'm jealous.
That's a good father-son thing to do, I feel like.
What, do they do that for a week?
I think so, yeah.
Wow.
Family tradition.
Yeah. It's turned into one. Rob was telling me a story, basically. And this dude flies an R-22.
I think it's right? Robbie, yeah.
Yeah. And, you know, they'll be zooming, like, up and over power lines. And it seems sketchy, but also, like, a lot of fun. So, Rob, if you're listening, hope you're having fun out there, dude. Yeah. Well, cool, guys. Welcome. And for the listeners out there, welcome back to Friday, Flight Suit Friday.
Heck yeah. Another Friday. Another week down.
Cool. Guess we should go into some highlights. Yeah.
Yeah, let's do it.
All right. Highlights this week. Got about two different things we're going to talk about. One, shout out to all the folks that did the Coast Guard workout to remember. Awesome workout.
Yes.
And then
great opportunity.
Yeah, for sure. Hopefully there were some good funds raised for that.
Yeah.
Also, in the near future, we have the Women in Aviation Conference coming up. And that's in March, right?
Yep. That is the third week of March. Let me look at my calendar real quick. I can tell. Okay.
Yep. Got it. March 21st through the 23rd. And it looks like this year they're having it down at the Orlando World Center Resort and Convention Center.
Yep.
So pretty sweet location.
That's honestly, I went a couple years ago in Nashville. Also a great place to have that conference. I can't speak enough of not only the experience, because it is a great experience. You get a lot of exposure to potential jobs on the outside. If you are looking to get out in the near future, it kind of gives you something to put on your radar if that's what you're trying to do in the future for flying wise, or the networking is probably the biggest takeaway that I got out of it. Yeah. So if anyone's going listening, definitely talk to other aviators, women aviators. And I wish, and I know they've been working on funding for this, but to try to get more men to go to it, because I think it's super beneficial for them to go and just listen to what us females have to say in our experiences, because I think it's really enlightening. So hopefully in the future we can try to at least push more men to go to it, because I think it's very helpful.
Yeah. Last year, Kenny Ingram went, of course, brought the podcast gear. And I think, you know, there's a lot of podcasts that they recorded down there. But I think one of the things that stood out was basically just understanding the different challenges, you know, that may be posed, and having a better understanding of that. So this year, Miranda, Instagram guru.
Instagram Miranda.
Is going to basically take the podcast gear, go down there and also conduct interviews for Flight Suit Friday, which is awesome.
Heck yeah.
So big shout out there. If you are listening and you're attending the Women in Aviation Conference, reach out on Instagram and maybe we can line something up.
Yeah, definitely.
If you have something that you'd like to talk about. Also, we've got a couple folks from ATC Mobile going down. So we have Melissa Owen, Commander Majeska, and Jackie Gutierrez, and they're going to be panelists this year. So awesome.
Love it.
Yep. And like the attendees are from, I mean, it's international, so all over.
So, yep. So it's put on by, I don't know the exact name of the company that puts it on, but there's a small Coast Guard portion. So the first day, unless it's changed, correct me if I'm wrong, I'm sure someone will hit up Miranda, but the first day is basically all Coast Guard related. And we just kind of talk about things that are going on in the fleet. And then we'll have senior aviators speak about their experiences that they've had throughout their career, especially as being a woman. And then the next couple days after that, there's just a bunch of booths that you could walk around and just speak to other people. I know off the top of my head, like the Air Force Academy, I guess, had a booth there.
Okay.
But if you're looking to get an interview with Southwest, that's like probably one of the biggest thing that pops out to me, is there was like this huge long line of people trying to get interviews with Southwest Airlines. So there's a lot of stuff to do, a lot of stuff to learn. And then the big like captivating event at the end is the dinner. So everyone dresses up in their like SDB alphas, I want to say it was.
Oh, nice.
And you just kind of all have dinner together and listen to people give their speeches about whatever it is they're going to talk about. So it's definitely a really good event.
Very cool. And that's just the 23rd of March.
Good stuff. Do that's it awesome. If you can.
Cool. Let's welcome our special guest. Yeah, again,
let's get him in here.
Dude, we got Brian Dougal in the house.
Hey guys.
Hi.
What's up, Brian?
It's an honor to be here.
Yeah.
Longtime listener, first time guest. I've been a fanboy of this podcast, admittedly, since who was one of the first guests? We had Commander Sanborn, Walton was on there. Buying Down Risk was a big one. I think Derek Schrammel's awesome Northern California star case was in there.
Yeah.
I mean, I've been listening ever since.
I think he's the other 80% I was talking about.
Yeah, I know.
He's What's Brian's that? It.
I love it.
Thanks for beefing up the stats of the podcast. You and all the members' mothers who might listen to the podcast. You
Me
know.
And Sam's mother, yeah.
Yeah.
See, I get those references.
That's awesome, dude. Well, tell us about yourself, where are you from, and perhaps a little bit about your career and what you're doing now.
Yeah, certainly. Born and raised outside Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. Tried the college gig for a little bit. Turns out you have to go to classes. So they politely asked me to maybe consider a different option. I had a good friend from high school enter the Coast Guard, and he was sending back, this was back in the days of printing out photographs and mailing them via snail mail to your friends before smartphones. So he would send Kodak pouch of photos of him out in Hawaii on his 110, I think it was the Assateague. They were doing M16 shoots, fishing, playing poker, just cruising around the Hawaiian chain. I was like, dude, I think this might be for me.
You got suckered in.
Yep. Suckered in. Hawaii was the goal. Went to boot camp, got in, got a 378 out of Hawaii. So when you put down any unit in D14, there's a solid chance you're going to a Whitehall.
So did you have guaranteed D17 leaving the recruiter's office?
Guaranteed D14. Guarantee stuff didn't really exist with my recruiter. He was super old school. He's like, I don't do any guarantees. Go out and figure it out on your
own.
Which,
on.
Hindsight, I kind of appreciate because I thought I wanted to be a bosun's mate.
Right.
I was interested in the law enforcement aspect of the Coast Guard. He said, I'm going to stop you right there. Go out, check out all the rates. Super grateful for him. Chief Alan Joseph, never forget the guy. Went to a 378, really enjoyed mess cooking for officers. That was great.
Absolutely.
Serving them food, cleaning their dishes, vacuuming staterooms. It was cool.
You paid your dues, bud.
Love it, dude. From there, we'd have quarters every day at 1300, and a Barber's Point 65 would overfly the harbor right there in Honolulu. There'd be a flight mech in the door. They'd be low and slow saying hey to us. It's like, how do I get that job? It's like, oh, you AMT or AET or AST. I was like, well, I don't know how to swim too well. You know, I had remedial training in boot camp. So I put my name on the AMTA school list.
Mm-hmm.
Mechanics did interest me from an early age. So by the grace of God, I got Airman Barber's Point. Side note, to this day, I think I would give up what I have right now to go back to being an airman with the same people at the same spot.
That was
the best 6 months of my career, I think.
That's cool, dude.
Hanging out the line shack, guys like Scotty Garen just having a good time towing aircraft and doing fuel samples. It was good. From there, A school was pretty rad. Enjoyed it. Metal shot was fun. From there, I got Hitron. That was right when they were transitioning from the 68 to the 65. So they did the big Hitron draft.
Really?
So probably like 6 to 10 students from every A school class in that time frame were getting orders to Hitron.
Okay.
So I think my other options were Traverse, Kodiak, and Mobile.
What year was that about? Like 2007?
It was 06, April 06. 06, yeah.
Okay.
So I wanted to go to Florida. Never been. I was like, oh, Florida looks cool. Picked Hitron. Enjoyed it. Awesome unit. I hear a lot of Hitron alumni come on this podcast and talk about the cool experience. I never got to fly the aircraft there, nor was I a gunner, but the deployments, the camaraderie, the crew cohesion, executing the missions, seeing bales getting offloaded from your efforts.
Yep.
It was definitely work satisfaction. You know, it was rad. It was cool. Saw some crazy places. Central South America, gorgeous. To this day, I still say I want to go back to Bocas del Toro, Panama. Stayed in a hotel on the water in stilts. I think we paid maybe $10 each between five of us. I mean, it was just a great time. Did 4 years in Hitron. Got paroled to New Orleans. That's where you and me met up, Nick.
Of course.
New Orleans, greatest SAR unit, the Coast Guard. Dude. Still bummed the 65 community relinquished it to the 60s.
I know. I hope they're taking care of it.
I think they are. I saw on their social media, they're doing good. They're doing the Mardi Gras parade.
Yep.
They can't do it on base. Remember we used to tow the 60 on the trailer around base housing?
Yeah, yeah.
I think the 60 is too dang big to do that cool stuff.
Yeah, I believe it. Well, they made a new Mardi Gras float.
I saw that. They revamped it.
It has a 60 on it instead of the 65.
Oh, they were offended, huh?
Yeah. It's- yeah, they couldn't possibly continue on with the old float that had the 65. Because it's, and I, if I remember right, the old one was a Coast Guard cutter with a 65 on the back.
Yeah.
Now it's a still a Coast Guard cutter, and they named it, oh gosh. Nah, never. I'm going to pass. I forget the name, but it's kind of cool. But yeah, it's a nice float.
That's cool. I had the opportunity one year. It was on Lundi Gras, the best day of Mardi Gras for you New Orleans people. Uh-huh. Lundi Gras, we rode in the Coast Guard float. The worst part was having to buy your own throws, which got a little pricey. But riding that float, it was just sensory overload, just thousands of people waving at you. And you're just, you know.
Did you get to chuck beads and
chucking beads? You know, you're not allowed to drink, but you know, you're just having a good old time, and it's all your homies that you kind of put your name on the Excel spreadsheet together and submitted it. So that was such a cool time. NOLA was great.
Yeah,
dude. The SAR.
Do you have a favorite experience in New Orleans?
I can't name a particular one. There's just so many that just run together. I was thinking about this earlier today. Yeah. We talk about biography and stuff between the SAR cases. Just working your fingers to the bone, but just seeing, you know, people getting saved. I mean, daily we had ambulance rendezvous on the ramp, live hoist, hospital drop-offs. I mean,
you remember they'd spool up the B-0 aircraft, and then they would call in the B-1 folks and then spool them up, and you'd have two duty crews basically out doing search and rescue.
Ironically, my first SAR case as a flight mech, because I wasn't flight mech in Hitron, obviously. First SAR case as a flight mech was as the B-1. I think we're having a birthday party at my house. Ton of people were over. I had something on the smoker, something in the crock pot. The phone went off. I was just like, oh, this is bad timing. Yep. I have to give instructions now to the people at my house. That, hey, I got to leave. Hopefully I'll be back in a few hours. Take this out of the smoker, do this. And they're like, I got to go, explain later. They ended up figuring it out.
Good.
Went SAR case. It was overturned fan boat, five hunters, their rifles, their dogs. They had three dogs, a couple beagles and a black lab.
Okay.
Hoisted them up. I was like, cool. So this is
a real hero.
This is what it's like. That was a benign case.
How far into your duty standing were you at that point?
First week, maybe.
Dude, that's awesome.
Yeah, it was wild.
I love it. And we were talking about this on the last episode where I think it was your flight mech and your rescue swimmer was their first duty.
First ones.
Right?
And they don't.
Or not their first duty. It was
first.
But their
case.
Yeah.
And it just happened to be nobody tells you until afterwards, right?
Yeah. Maybe you don't want to know until afterwards, too.
Yeah, it's probably for the best.
So my first AC duty, we'll skip around. First AC duty, I had a live hoist, too, but we'll get to that here in a second. New Orleans, favorite experience, dude? They're all good, man. I did most of my time on night shift, so I didn't stand a too much duty.
Okay.
But I think by the end, when I was crunching OCS stats for my narrative and whatnot, I had over 26 live hoists within like a 6 month time frame of actual
duty. Dude, I love that, man. 26. I love that.
Yeah, it was crazy. There was pilots that left there with over 300. Yeah. So like, it was crazy.
And I don't mind. I just cut in real quick, but my experience, you know, I left Cape Cod and went down to New Orleans, and within the first 6 months, wasn't even 6 months, but I'll just say 6 months in New Orleans, I had more hands-on survivors than I had in Cape Cod in 4 years. And I was just, my mind was blown, dude. It's such a work hard, play hard mentality. I really loved it down there.
And it was the play hard. Like that place was like the devil's playground. We definitely played hard. No one got in trouble, but yeah, we definitely played hard.
Yeah.
That was when I got a wild hair at my butt. My son was born. I was like, maybe I could do something different. You know, I was getting bored.
Yeah.
Possessed all the qualifications, having a hard time in the service. I was like, let me try finishing up some college here.
And you're an E5 at the time.
Yeah. Right? E5 at the time. I had an old mentor back in Hitron saying, hey dude, there's tuition assistance. There's $3,000 or $3,500 sitting in an account right now. It's up to you what you're going to do with it. It's either going to expire and go away and come back the next fiscal year, or you can start nickel and diming some classes. So I did kind of put it to the wayside, PCS, picked it back up when my son was born. And then I found myself working night shift, long hours, spouse that worked day shift. So I would wake up with my newborn, get him a bottle, open up the laptop with the right hand, bounce the kid on my knee with the left hand, but finally managed through it. Had some awesome leadership there, phenomenal leadership. I think that may be one of my favorite memories. I still keep in contact with a few of them. Captain retired Reedland, he still keeps tabs on me. Okay. He was a huge proponent of my career success. And I think he looked out for all of us. He knew all of our names, all of our stories, our family lives. He was good. Went transitioned Commander Brand Huber, now Captain Brand Huber retired. And then from there, that's when we had the commanding officer that I think got you and me both in with his signature, Captain retired Dave Cooper.
Yep.
Not his twin brother.
Yeah. Hard to distinguish the two.
It's a funny story. His twin brother was here for Peak Horse, Captain Cooper. Can't remember his name. I went up to him to go give him a big handshake and stuff. And the guy I was with, I think it was Chuck Arena, was like, no, that's his twin. Stop. I was like, oh, whoops. Pushed through OCS. Got the ninth first time, as always, as a tradition. Ricky Williams was our AEO at the time. He sat me down. He took a good look into my package, and he's like, hey, dude, we got to revamp some stuff. So I remember him working late, as he always did, pulled me in from the hangar deck in my greasy coveralls covered in, you know, sweat and paint and mosquitoes and whatever else was in New Orleans. And he sat me down. We went through everything with a fine tooth comb, and we revamped, did the rights, put in the verbiage in there that the panel would like to see. Got me selected.
Yep.
That was awesome.
Dude, shout out to Ricky Williams. I am a firm believer that he was the hardest working guy at that air station.
Also the humblest. There.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yes.
Walk silent, carry a big stick. I don't know. Yeah. His leadership was just amazing.
Big good fan.
From there, OCS, they couldn't have gotten to me earlier, so I had to do my full four in New Orleans. So I went to OCS. That was the best summer camp ever. I don't know how you did 4 years there, Leah.
I mean, going into it, I was like, had no idea 200 weeks and that there was other opportunities to do something for 17 weeks. Like I would have taken that in a heartbeat.
Yeah.
100%.
Shake and bake officers, they call us, right?
How hard was it to see a new group of OCS members come through and go and you realize you still had like 3.5 years?
Yeah, it was hard. You would watch it, like, especially in the summertime and they're all out there in their whites and they're all like super happy and we're all in our freaking room, sad and miserable. Yeah.
So sorry.
Sorry, Leah.
It's all right.
No.
Yeah.
OCS. So I was at that weird timeline where the Navy flight school doesn't accept you past age 31. I was 30 3/4 commissioned.
Yeah, buddy.
So
you had one shot.
Pushing the limit.
One shot. So I went to the interview. You know, OCS did the flight panel interview. Ironically, a member was on the interview board who was my previous EO in New Orleans, Captain Govertson. So he was my EO in NOLA for a brief period. And then he went. I think he was an academy instructor. So I walk in, see him there, see the big smile flashing back at me. And in my heart, I was like, I think homie's got my back.
Yeah.
Shout out Captain Govertson. Appreciate you. I'm not sure what input you had. And then Commander Menzie, I think I did a fam flight with her in Barbers when she was a new C-130 pilot. So I was like, oh, hey, ma'am, I remember you. So I was trying to just kind of like see if any memories, like, oh, Dougal, flight school, cool. So
certainly there helpful to see some familiar faces, right?
It put me at ease during the interview.
Yeah.
But, I told him, I was like, listen, this is my only opportunity. If I don't get it, I want to enjoy whatever other opportunity comes my way. Got flight school, check in. Captain Turner, our signo in Pensacola. He's like, hey, how old are you again, Brian? I don't know if I looked old or what. I was like, oh, I turned 31 in 3 weeks. He's like, oh, okay, hang on. Immediately stops me, picks up his office phone, calls some Navy commander, captain, whatever. He's like, all right, Brian, I got you going to IFS next week. We can't clown around.
Oh, so you had to physically start training.
Mm-hmm.
You couldn't just be checked in.
You had to be classed in the IFS, which is what he said.
Okay.
Interesting. I didn't know that.
Yeah, I didn't either.
Yeah.
I thought you just had to like get picked up.
Yeah.
No, you have to be starting training by your 31st birthday. So
that would have been such a bummer, dude, if you went, like, if they didn't realize that, right? And that's where, I guess, where leadership kicks in.
I think they thought, like, oh, he's fine. Because I checked in the flight school January 6th or whatever it was. But he's like, yeah, dude, you got to get cracking now. The wait for IFS was a couple of months, nothing egregious like it is now.
Yeah.
But yeah, he pulled some strings, got me
that
classed
is awesome.
Up, jumped a whole bunch of homies, but that's okay.
Yeah.
Flight school was awesome. My second born came along. So studying aero and all that other cool stuff in API was really rad with a newborn.
I can relate.
Yeah. Yeah, you can. That's right. Maddie was born.
Some people have really fun flight school experiences where I think if you have a newborn child, it's a little bit different, you know?
Yeah.
Maybe a little bit more stressful.
MIF was the goal. Everyone else was getting, you know, fives or sevens. And I was passing.
Passing's good.
We were doing good.
How sleep deprived were you guys?
I don't know.
I think
just
I think,
kind of on like autopilot.
Yeah.
Like adrenaline rush in a sense. You're just like
fear, like fight or flight, you know, it's just like, ooh, I got to get this done or I'm going to
constantly stressed, always worried. I'm pretty sure I lost weight.
I didn't have a lot of hair to begin with. I certainly didn't after that.
It didn't help out either.
My 2-year-old and newborn either. Helped with that.
Yeah.
Flight school was cool. Selected helos. I was on the fence with fixed wing, rotary wing, but I wanted to get back to my baby girl, my 65.
There you go.
Selected rotary wing, got the Air Station Miami. Pretty rad tour.
Was that a top pick for you?
It was up there.
Okay.
Yeah, I was not displeased by any means. Yeah. Awesome tour, beautiful flying, great career opportunities. Again, another unit littered with awesome leaders that helped me out along the way. Fell in love with the engineering officers that were there. Captain Kostecki, Commander Matsuoka, just two great dudes that really showed me like, yeah, engineering's where you want to be. I was on the fence with it because I knew the work-life balance is slightly shifted with engineers versus, you know, non-engineer pilots, not throwing shade or anything, but I know there's going to be, longer days, but the return on investment, seeing the instant job satisfaction of helping someone get to where they are like Rick Williams did for you and I. Yeah, I mean, that just puts a smile on your face.
Yeah, you get to pay it forward now, right?
Definitely. I chose it to pay it forward, to work for the people and to just give back to the awesome community I grew up in.
Yeah. That's awesome, man.
Yeah. Got engineering after my second attempt. I'm at Mobile now. It's the first time I ever got my number one pick.
Whoa.
So super pumped to be here. Love it.
Except for your D14.
Yeah, that was pick. Right. But they gave me a 378. Yeah, true. So day one. Yeah, love it here. Mobile is amazing. The work-life balance, I can't speak enough about it. Work hard, play hard. Student production, not always the most gratifying mission for especially the maintainers on the hangar deck, how to keep them motivated when you're not actually pulling people out of the surf like their peers are at A school.
Absolutely.
So we got to think of like outside of the box ways to motivate, incentivize, take care of the folks, do fun stuff, keep it light, but also serious and focus on the basics. So it's been a challenge, big steep learning curve coming to a 90 person division. Got to do my student syllabus here in the job as one of the two AEOs here. So that was awesome. Thank you, Mark Bonner, for helping me limp along.
I was going to say, man, and when I found out you guys were going to be paired up, I was very excited about that.
Oh, dude. Because
I'm a big Mark Bonner fan. Obviously a big Brian Dugal fan.
Yeah, dude.
I feel like you guys make a good pair.
No clue who he was. And I had a bunch of people messaging me like, dude, you're going to love working with Mark. Yep. And it has been nothing short of the best time. I think our office is referred to as the frat house. There used to be a bunch of cans of Grizzly and coffee and you know, all sorts of yucky, sweaty clothes and stuff in there. But man,
it smelled like pee because the urinal was draining into your office behind the wall, right?
It wasn't our fault, I promise, guys.
That's a fact.
Unrelated.
It's still gross.
Yeah. Thank you, fact inch, for fixing that quickly. Goodness gracious. But yeah, Mobile's been great. Yep. A little bit weird not being part of TradeUp. Me and Mark are kind of in like a purgatorious state over there. We're part of the pilot cadre here. We shag events with you guys all the time, but we're not actually responsible for direct student training and throughput.
Yeah, I think it's just a different mission. You know, you guys are, and I know I've always been envious of engineers for this, but you guys are in charge of people.
That's leading the best part.
People, which is super cool because, you know, in the Coast Guard, obviously as a pilot, you rarely, unless you're a department head or something, or an engineer,
right?
Rarely are you, or of course, the command, you know what I mean?
Yeah, certainly.
You're not really in charge of folks.
But we get direct hands-on leadership daily. Yeah. I mean, absolutely. Daily, just a line of people coming in and out, helping solve problems, or at least get them the resources, which has been phenomenal.
Yeah, for sure, man.
Having walked a mile in most of their shoes, like, you know, I can understand and empathize where they're coming from.
Yeah, especially you. I mean, you come, you know, E4, well, airman, E3, E4, E5. So you've done it. And when you were enlisted, you had FEB responsibilities?
Yeah,
and you
FEB, primary QA.
You're a FMI as well, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Dude, it's awesome.
Yeah, you can relate. Cool. So let's talk about the enlisted officer thing.
Yeah.
I mean, we kind of talked about it a little bit, but for perhaps our listeners out there who might be enlisted, or, you know, this might kind of go towards some of our potential direct commission aviators as well.
Sure.
Like, hopefully this could be a helpful conversation in order to get your foot in the door and become an officer in the Coast Guard and hopefully eventually fly an aircraft.
I've had an affinity towards helping others get whatever session point they want, whether it be DCE, the new DCEM, Environmental Management, OCS, RT, you know, whatever. I've been drawn towards helping people do it. And I think that was kind of instilled in me from Rick Williams.
I think so too.
Yeah. Reach out to a lot of people, gather all the resources. And I kind of hit my groove with it, figuring out once I saw what panel flavors were, what people were getting selected, what attributes they had when I was a new pilot in Miami. It's like, oh, okay, this is what their package, right? This is what they like. And I talk to everyone, I give everyone the same speech. I don't get on too many pulpits in the shop. You know, I try to just keep my mouth shut and just keep ears open. One of the pulpits I do get on is talk about, okay, everyone applying to these accession points is a very talented petty officer in whatever their rate or specialty is.
Yeah.
What is going to make you jump out on paper? What's going to make you stand out to the panel where they mm-hmm. pick up the documents and like, whoa, Leah did all this community service. She did Habitat. Like,
yeah.
dang, this person, cool. They're EFEB and they're QA, but so is this other, the, all these other people's in the stack. So getting people to be involved in the community, be involved in the unit, do things above and beyond what's outside their normal scope of duties. That right. seems to yeah. be the key factor that gets some selected over others.
Yeah, I agree with that 100%.
People get wrapped around the axle with letters of recommendation. Some people were trying to get politicians to write their recs.
So that's cool, right?
And people were not, yeah.
And that might be beneficial, but if you don't have a lot to write about yourself.
Right. I told them to go for that. Content over name. So if you have okay. Joe Schmo that's going to write beautiful content about what you accomplished, then pick that one over the retired 08 next door neighbor that your grandpa grew, you know, lived next to.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. So, you know, for folks that might be interested in, and I think my story is kind of very similar to yours. I was a E5, you know, about 10 years in the Coast Guard at that point. Yeah. I think I was just ready for a little bit more responsibility. And I certainly rode your coattails. So whatever Ricky Williams cleaned up on your OCS package, probably
he translated on yours
to mine. So I really appreciate you for that.
Dude. Yeah, I remember we were outside the swimmer shop in New Orleans. Yeah. I just come out of like, I don't know if it was a mock interview or an interview or something. Like, dude, how'd it go? I was like, yeah, I'm applying, whatever. Got rejected, trying again. Like, can I see what they're looking for? I think I remember just putting my folder down like, here, dude, burn copies, cross yeah. my name out, put Litchfield on there and go change the A or the M to an S yeah. and go for
I
it.
I think we had some things in common, you know, like E5, FEB,
yeah.
some sort of instructor role.
Involved in the community.
QA type stuff, involved in the community, which was easy to do in New Orleans because,
oh, yeah.
you know, there's a lot of opportunities and stuff. But
for sure.
Okay, so you've seen a couple interviews now. Like, what are the things that do stand out? And like, I think I have an idea
sure.
of what does, and you can tell me if I'm wrong, but like leadership opportunities, probably yeah. volunteerism,
yeah.
Just going above and beyond, but you probably have more specific items.
Some of the interviews I've done where people jump out and get the, you know, the top punch or the right block, whatever you want to call it. Those are the people that have done their homework and know exactly what the 2, 3, 4, 5 year plan looks like through the officer rates. You know, a lot of people come in there like, oh, I'd like to be an officer because I want to lead. Oh, okay. And
yeah.
There's a guy in Miami, Greg Vella. He did homework all the way up through grad school and payback, what officer's specialty codes. He dissected an officer's OER and wrote his narrative for his interview or like his monologue for his interview, tailoring it to the OER traits for a six.
That's interesting.
It was incredible. He nailed it. He's a JG or probably a lieutenant by now, but people okay. that go above and beyond the interview, it really shows. I don't get hung up on the, you know, eye contact or uniform, stuff like sure. that. I don't care about that, dude. We're nervous and sometimes we don't yeah, hold eye yeah. contact too well. I want to know is like, how passionate are you and how deep rooted is your knowledge and what okay. you want to get into? Like, do you know exactly what you're getting into? Death by 1,000 paper cuts, yeah. Carpal tunnel, mm-hmm. All those things, you know?
I mean, it's a little bit different than what I thought I was getting myself into.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think you're certainly on the right path. Like, come prepared and you've done your homework. And you have a passion for it, right?
And that just shows in the interview. It just makes those blocks so easy to fill in where I'm not sitting yeah. there.
You're not pulling information from folks,
pulling
right?
Pulling info, asking the same question three different ways. When you don't have to do that, dude, you can end an interview 45 minutes tops and just write yeah. a beautiful story about them.
Yep. I remember spending a lot of time on my OCS package.
Yeah. I think that's by design, dude. It seems yeah. like they design it that way to weed out people that are maybe straddling the fence. I think they want people yeah. that are all the way in that are going to go through all these hoops mm-hmm. to put forth the effort to have that shining package.
I think, tell me if I'm wrong, but like 6 months, probably a minimum amount of time to get something prepared.
That's if you, that's if you check all the blocks.
Ready, right?
Yeah. Agreed.
Yeah.
Agreed. I can't tell you how many times, you know, me and Mark kick back things for rewrites, you
yeah.
know, like, hey dude, you got to do this. You got to do that. Get them the proper templates, set yeah. them for, you know, set them up with that stuff. It's difficult for some to grasp that stuff.
Yeah.
Is it hard to get picked up on your first try? Cause that's a rumor that I've always heard or been told, like back in Atlantic City, a bunch of guys on the hangar deck would apply for OCS and they all had this notion that, oh, it's very hard to get picked up on the first go.
I've heard the same thing. I believe it, but there are plenty of people that got on their first time. Like you got it in your first time, Nick, right?
Yeah. Well, again, because I rode your coattails and
I wouldn't go that far.
I just scratched out your name and put my name on your OCS package.
Oh goodness. Yeah. I don't know. I made a point, you know, from Rick Williams, put in there something to the effect that this is my second time applying. I'm committed to the, you know, the panel's decisions. I'll keep applying until no longer eligible, whatever.
Yeah.
Something to that. And I think maybe that's what did it.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, nailing the interview. And so I plugged some people, some, you know, more senior officers that have actually sat on the panels up in headquarters, and I plugged them, and there's, you know, there's only so much info that they can give me, but I've been tipped off by a few. The same advice is like, hey dude, make sure they nail the interview. Make sure they got a good CO's rec.
Okay.
So as you know, as everyone knows, there's different verbology that goes in, and seeing it now at my level, I realize what goes into it. And it's a very fair, it's a very well thought out process.
That's still mystery language to me.
You can't give everyone highest possible recommendation. The skipper can only give one of those, and then you have to change the verbology for the other ones. Yeah. And then
otherwise it becomes watered down. Right.
And the hardest part is like dissecting your guys and gals, like, oh, this person did that, and just stacking them up to present for signature. I mean, that is probably
tough.
That's the worst part to do.
It's like picking your favorite kid.
Literally, that's what it feels like sometimes.
Wow. It's tough.
Yeah.
That's why you make the big bucks, dude.
Yeah. That engineering pay is pretty rad.
here's a question. Do you guys look at personality, and can this person hold a conversation? Cause I think that's a little bit, in my opinion, kind of important. Like, you don't want someone's going to be robotic.
Yeah. I'll be honest with you. Me personally, I'm interviewing someone as someone that, like, do I want to share beers with them afterwards? Do I want to sit in a cockpit with them at 2 a.m. on core 50 miles offshore? Like,
yeah, for sure.
Yes or no. Like, yeah, you seem like, okay. And that kind of goes into it, which probably isn't the right answer, but it's my answer.
You know, I think it makes sense though. And
yeah, I agree with that 100%.
Okay.
Yeah. And I think, you know, that certainly plays a role in maybe more like the DCA, the direct commission aviator interviews, right? Which, you know, it's a little off topic. We're talking about OCS, but you know, of course you've sat in on DCA interviews as well.
Because ironically, just did one 2 days ago.
Perfect.
But, you know, those folks are qualified. They're
very well,
you know,
qualified.
Previous, either warrant officer or commissioned officer.
Right.
So it's like, cool, you possess those things, but are you cool? Can you be in a wardroom with eight people at a small unit and not rub people the wrong way, you know, because that's like a huge part of like Coast Guard aviation.
Especially at those three helo units. Yeah, I agree with that. During our interview, I mean, that was one of the talking points during the debrief. Like, oh, what do y'all think? And we all shared the same opinion. Like, yeah, I think I could sit next to him for 6 hours plus and yeah, be cool.
Yeah.
That's good stuff. Yeah.
So, yeah, I guess those are my pro tips.
Sweet, man. So
I have a question for both of you guys.
Shoot.
Ready.
Do you like being an officer more than being enlisted?
I get asked this by the hangar deck almost daily. No kidding.
I was asked that today by another pilot. Actually.
Were you really?
Yeah.
Oh man.
Yeah.
Nick, you want to go first?
So I don't have any regrets. You know, I chose to accept more responsibility, and more responsibility is what I got, you know?
Yeah.
Some of that stuff
was
weird, right?
Yeah.
Like, okay, cool. You're an analysis officer because, well, you're a commission officer now.
Yeah.
Okay, cool. I can do that. That's fine. But the responsibility aspect, it's great, you know, like, get to be in charge of an aircraft and an entire crew. And like, I wouldn't change that for the world. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
so
certainly.
I got what I asked for, and again, no regrets, but, when people ask me, hey, do you miss being a rescue swimmer?
Yes,
and
that was my next
would
question.
would you like to go back to that? Oh, hell yeah, man. That was the best. It was, you know, you show up to work and, you know, you're going to have fun and, you know, you're probably going to find somebody in the shop and pick on them and, everyone's going to gang up on them and it's, you know, and
poor Jared Edwards.
Yeah. Sometimes it's your day and sometimes it's the other guy's day. And it's just so much fun. You work out 2 hours every day at least. And I don't know, it was great experience. And of course, very rewarding when you pull somebody out of the water, but, yeah, no, I chose this path and I'm quite happy with it.
Good.
For sure.
Yeah. Again, no regrets. Same as Nick. I did not get paid to work out and stand duty like a rescue swimmer, but I love being an officer, leading the people. And like I said, working for the people mostly. Knew what I was getting into. people had told me before, like, hey, you know, you kind of got to drop the enlisted shtick. But I disagree with that. I tell slightly less fart jokes, but I still go out there and cut up with the guys and gals. And, you know, there's no need to put up some facade that you're an officer and you have to act differently.
Oh, yeah. Definitely.
I don't tell as many weird jokes in front of briefing senior officers about aircraft status for hurricane ops, but you know, you figure out where the line is pretty quickly into your officer career.
Yep. Yep. I agree with that.
Blurred lines.
100%. Cool.
Good question.
Yeah, definitely.
Do you have, for folks that might be on the fence about applying or are currently applying, do you have any parting words for them? Words of wisdom or advice?
I guess back to what I said earlier, stand out on paper, jump out on paper, really own that interview and really just work hard, not for the sake of getting a top notch or a top nod from your CO, but work hard because it means something to you. Mm-hmm. That's going to show through. Like, genuine hard work really shows through versus people just checking blocks, showing up to one LDAC meeting and leaving right. just so they can put it on paper. Yeah. Be genuine, work hard, and it pays off.
Yeah. So some I've heard it before, like people be like, I want to apply to OCS or become an officer so I can get paid more money. Dog, it is not worth the money. Don't do it for the money.
No, definitely not.
More really, money, more problems.
I liked my E5 pay. I was quite happy with that. I could live a fine life.
You're living well.
Yeah, you know. But no, with all the additional responsibilities sometimes, it's you know, it's not worth the money. You got to love it, right? You got to love helping folks and kind of changing gears and really doing a different mission.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Well, I think it gives you guys the benefit of knowing what they're going through too, right? Like, I have an idea, but you guys have been in their shoes, so you can help them probably in a way that I would not be able to. So I think that's a beautiful thing.
Yeah.
I know how to soften the blow when I have to ask people to stay late.
Yeah, yeah.
Spoiler alert.
You know how to incentivize?
Pizza party is not always the right answer.
Yeah.
Beer, question mark?
Oh, and you drink responsibly, right?
Right, always.
Absolutely.
Is it 0013? What is the?
Yeah,
012? Yep. Something like that.
Coast Guard leadership's real proud of us for that one.
Oh, goodness. Yeah.
Leah, have you ever felt like at a disadvantage because you didn't have prior enlisted experience, like just like working with a crew in a crewed environment?
Yes and no. And I say that because I really try to indulge myself and one, get to know the people that I'm flying with and just the people on the hangar deck. Cause I take a lot of pride in being able to go out there and say hi to them. I don't want to walk by the people that are working on the helos or doing whatever it is that they're doing. I think it means a lot to them if you can acknowledge them. And that's so easy to do from someone who came from the academy or C-Spy or whatever it is. Right. You can just go out there and interact with these people and get to know them and their side. And that just takes you being willing to do it. However, there's that other piece where you guys had that experience of going to Cape May boot camp and wherever your journey was after that. Mm-hmm. I can't relate. Like, I don't know what it's like to be split up on third shift or the mid shift and have to work those hours. I don't know that, but I can also sympathize with these people
you know how to be a human.
Yeah, exactly. Just be a good person and be humble. And I've seen a lot of robotic pilots, unfortunately, and it doesn't take a lot of effort to just go out there and get to know these guys and see what they're doing, ask them what they're doing. Even like as a baby nugget, as your first air station going through syllabus.
Yeah.
Go out there with the, if there's a helo in heavy maintenance or whatever there is and ask them what they're doing. They could teach you so, so much.
Yeah.
And that's the piece that I say on, to get to your question, I wish I did have, because you guys have that mechanical knowledge like you do, Brian, versus like me, I'm just, you know, trying to figure out what I'm doing with my brief. And
we all figure it out.
Yeah. We just get through it. But I would say,
that's a good piece for like folks. I remember, cause it's kind of weird going from flight school when you're, you know, it's just basically pilots. There's no crew members.
Yeah.
Unless you're doing that weird, sortie. I forget which one it was, but you're doing like confined area landings and sling ops or something. I don't know if you guys remember that one.
Was that in the tactics phase?
Tactics, yeah.
Yeah,
I remember you have like one crew member with you and you're we got a crew member with us.
Yeah, that was cool. The cargo and
That's right.
I remember that.
But like you don't fly with the crew. So you come over to the Coast Guard and come through your designation course and you're like, oh, I have one, at least one crew member with us.
Yeah.
Sometimes two. So it's just, it's a little bit of a game changer for some folks, you know what I mean? Just working together as a crew and splitting up those responsibilities, I suppose.
And I think it's also a surprise to see the people that kind of forget that they're back there. Like, I don't know if you guys ever flown with somebody who you're trying to have
self-loading cargo.
Yeah. You're like trying to have a conversation with them as one word answers. And you're like, okay, that's how this fight's going to go.
I'm your chalk puller.
Yeah.
Puller and installer. Got it. I got your chocks. No problem. I
had one buddy, he went an entire sortie and he made it a point to not basically communicate like with the crew. You know, he just wanted to sit in the back. And he was able to do it. Like, he just sat back there. Nobody talked to him at all.
That's awesome.
So, you know, it happens.
I will say, having sat in the swimmer seat, it is pretty easy to not immerse yourself in the conversation. Because
you mean
it's just,
fall asleep?
It just, that too.
That's called napping.
Yeah, that too. But, like, it's so easy to just kind of, like, just fade away. You know, that meme that just, like, fades away into the bush. That's kind of what it feels like back there. So I don't blame the guys in the back for not talking as much, but like in the front, for whatever reason, I feel like I have to have like some sort of conversation. I can't just go 2 hours of sitting there and not talking to somebody.
Yeah. I remember being a crew member in the back and, you know, as an AST three or two or whatever I was, like the pilots would probably be task saturated with something. And I'd be like, hey dudes, you guys like that sunset? You know, or just like something totally stupid. And they're like, yeah, sure. Yeah. It looks great. You know, like now that I know what they're going through, I'm just like, yeah, that was dumb. Like, why was I bugging them about the sunset or that cool shark that I just saw in the water? You know what I mean? But I was probably bored.
Yeah.
Anywho.
To back Leah's point though, some of my favorite leaders, ironically, are the people like you that do go out and take the time to get to learn the crews. I'll name drop Reeland, Brand Huber, Cute Cooper. I mean, they walk the hangar deck. I think it was like every Friday, Commander Brand Huber had his Diet Coke religiously, and he just learned all of us. He knew spouses, kids, college, whatever, or, what their kids are doing, grades, kids. Yeah. It was amazing. Like, dude, you're the CEO of this base and you know my whole story.
Yeah, dude.
It's such a feel good when they know that. When your leaders know who you are, they know a little bit about your life. Like, you feel important.
Yeah.
I admire that as a leadership quality in somebody. For sure.
I'm going to embarrass Leah. I got some extension paperwork. Officer swearing an oath, Lieutenant Leah Steinbeck. Like, oh, aren't you just so popular?
Oh, man.
Wait, are you jealous? Is that what you're telling me?
I mean,
I want to know what you guys are doing. What kind of cool mission are you going to go on?
My second one since I've been here.
I've seen, I've definitely seen your name more than once. I was like, what is this crap? Of course, go and give
that
them.
That means they love you.
Or hate me, one of the two. Yeah.
Are you guys, you don't have to name drop, but are you doing something cool for the enlisted ceremony? Or the re-enlistment, sorry.
I haven't talked to them yet.
Okay.
I want to see what they want to do. I like to keep it in the ball in their court.
Yeah.
When I was in Atlantic City, I would take them to, well, first I would give them the option of what they wanted to do. And if they were like, I don't care, well, then I roll my eyes. I'm like, all right, we're going to the Wall Street pad. We're going to New York City. We're going to do this big.
Ooh, love that.
But Mobile's not as exciting. So we'll have to figure something out.
That's awesome.
You can you can fly over Bamahenge or something. I still haven't been there.
Oh, the dinosaurs and like the giant doll with her knees showing or something. Like a 40-foot doll half submerged in the water.
I've only heard stories.
Oh, it's super creepy.
Yeah.
It is creepy. And I didn't even know what I was looking at. Dan Blaish and I were flying a few weeks ago. And he's like, there it is. And I'm like, where? And then, you really got to know what you're looking for.
Okay. I'll get over there one of these days.
That's cool.
Yeah.
I offer people, come up with an idea, or we're just going to go to B-Dubs, have a beer, and sign it with some wings.
Oh, heck, that's cool. That's a good one, too.
Yeah, that's my personal favorite.
Okay, nice.
No one's taken me up on it yet, ironically.
Oh, really?
Can't figure that out.
They're like, nah, I just want to do it here.
No, dude.
Yeah. Cool, man. You guys want to switch gears, talk about some 65 stuff?
Yeah.
Sure.
Yeah, okay. Big milestone right now for us.
Yeah, for sure. What do we got going on?
Well, we just completed our 65 Echo transition.
Nice.
Woot, woot.
What is it? Took like 3.5, 4 years.
So we're talking about it today. Plus, right? It was summer of 2020 when it started with Air Station Houston.
Yeah. 4-ish.
Yeah.
Give or take.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's a long time. And a lot of people had a lot of hands in that pot, and to actually finally have it come to a close, I think it's a good thing for us in the division, because now we can shift our focus on trying to get more co-pilots out in the fleet. Like, we're going to Nick and I are about to be super busy with the amount of students that are going to be coming through. I think we're looking at 4 students a week for the designation course, depending on redes that come in. And that's going to equivalent to eventually, when that starts to stack up, 8 pilots a day. So 8 IPs a day that we're going to need for
just like flight sorties or whatever.
Flight sorties. Yeah. So that's a lot on our side for pilot availability. And it's a lot on the engineering side as well. So it's going to be very interesting to see how we all manage that together.
Yeah, for sure.
I was grateful of the early comms with TradeUp. You guys in particular, letting us know like this was coming down the pipe. Only so much we can do with program flight hours. We can only spread the peanut butter so much. Mm-hmm. We're able to support the full sortie matrix now. There's not a whole lot we can do without an 8th or 9th aircraft with the bodies that come along with it. So with our 7 right now, all Echo Fleet, thank goodness. I mean, we're putting everything out there that we can.
Yeah.
Well, and we're the lowest priority, right, on the list for parts availability.
This was a hot
rumor.
This was a hot rumor.
As in ATC?
As in ATC.
Yeah, as in ATC.
Oh, really? Okay.
This is a rumor, hot topic discussion. Precedence, order of issuance of items. So number 1 being like NCR, number 2 Hitron deployed, 3 Alcona SAR, 4 Incona SAR, then ATC Mobile all at the bottom. This has been like strong tribal knowledge for a while. I remember it in one of my ALC briefs during my student syllabus year. I mentioned it to my EO, had a very difficult time producing it. The only stuff we really found that supports that, I think, was like gearbox related stuff from back in 2020 or 2020 rather. We're just trying to posture ourselves as far as like maintenance, spreading out heavy maintenance cycles, any parts that might be on back order, you know, landing gear, pitot tubes or hydraulic generators, stuff like that. We're just trying to mitigate our maintenance cycles so we're not stacking planes up in the hole. And our warrant's phenomenal. Shout out Chad Wetzel doing a great job of keeping our downtime very minimal.
It's tough, man.
It is.
That's a tough job trying to spread all that stuff out over so many different sorties.
Gosh, dude.
And of course, unplanned maintenance, right?
Yeah.
Unplanned maintenance.
These helicopters are not very young, so I'm sure they're... What's more, like unplanned maintenance, i.e. things breaking, or the planned maintenance
aspect? It seems like the planned maintenance right now has been eating our lunch, and that's mainly because like a tail rotor control shaft comes up high time, like crap, we're not going to get one for a hot minute.
Gotcha.
Little things like that, like, oh, this hydraulic pump's coming up, like, ooh, I don't know if these exist, or when the item manager is going to issue us one, you know, where we're at. Is Atlantic City going to shag the next one off the line before us, and we're going to have to wait for the third one? I don't know. It's always that guessing game.
Yeah. So I feel like depending on the year, there's always kind of like a part that's the hot topic, right? for being short. You know, I think for a period of time, it was main gearboxes. You mentioned that. Tires, believe it or not, I've heard of. And then
brakes.
Brakes, that was a big one.
And I've also heard there's this other component. Is it a wiper, like a switch or something like that, that might be going bad? Or
maybe.
Anyways, which was like a strange component, but it's like, yeah, sometimes you do need those wipers to work.
Fly faster, get the water off the windscreen. I don't know.
Have you heard of anything like, are there any hot topic parts right now that are in short?
There's a handful. Off the top of my head, like LP caps. There's actually ground rules for cannibalization of LP caps. That's how short they see it. I think they solved the problem with the MFD, so that's good. We got the new screens, the new high-res screen. Got the new OFP load. That's been amazing.
Yeah.
Although I'm not a huge fan of that arrow for the hover vector. I liked my crossbars personally.
Really?
Yeah,
really?
I'm a weirdo. Okay. That little arrow just, I don't know.
It kind of does like this weird twirl.
It does do a twirl.
And I like want to focus on it. I'm like, what is
Why
it?
Why am I twirling?
Oh, I haven't seen that yet. Like when you're in a, like a zero knot hover?
Zero hover.
And it's just, it's kind of trying to find like where your next reference is.
Gotcha.
And so that's where I've seen it do. It's like a little 360.
Now, if you always have drift when you're trying to maintain a steady hover, you never get that.
Right, then you don't have to worry about that.
Just do what I do. just don't maintain a steady hover.
Oh, goodness. We're doing our best. I know ALC is doing a phenomenal job. I think there's a lot of hopes at the field level, like with us taking, Alpat's 465s offline, that, hey, maybe they can just strip these all apart, put all these parts in a room, and just start issuing out to solve some of our long NMCS issues. Don't know. I think there's probably a little bit more red tape attached to that sort of thing than we realize at the field level. I know ALC, product line manager, EO and stuff, they're doing their best to keep the fleet happy. And they've been doing such a phenomenal job, dude. It's just so incredible. These airframes nearing and you know, eclipsing 20,000 flight hours on them. They're still doing super good.
I know those guys are working every day. It's not like a job that just goes away, right? No. You just like work your way through it and you're like, sweet, mission complete. Yeah. Like every day you probably wake up and you're like, cool, what kind of new issues are we dealing with today? You know?
Yeah, they're what like the nonstop need? Over there. And I think we forget about that and kind of take it for granted a little bit.
Yeah.
Agreed.
Yes. Yeah.
Agreed. Getting to do a product line visit and some tours during your engineering syllabus really opens up your eyes to how exactly the sausage is made.
Yep.
It was just humbling to see how talented those men and women are over there and the products they're putting out for us. I mean, they truly have the fleet's best interest at heart with every single decision they make. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's phenomenal. The teams out there.
Yeah. I'm heading up there for the stand visit actually in the near future.
That'll be cool to see.
So yeah, one of the things I want to do is like the product line tour, if I can, I'm sure I'd be able to.
Absolutely. Cale Dern's up there now. You remember him?
Okay. Of course.
NOLA alumni. Yep. One of the cool pilots. Yep. One of the many cool pilots there.
So many cool
He's
pilots.
The new SRR EO. I believe he took over for Jesse Cremines.
Okay.
Hit up Cale, dude. He'd probably love to have a beer with you.
Dude, that's what's up. I can't wait to see it though. I remember in A school, back when we, when the AST program was in Elizabeth City, they took us on a nice fun run. I forget how many miles we're doing. Doesn't matter. But we ran through basically like the flight line for some reason. And I remember seeing a 65 torn down to its bare frame. And it was, is it an aluminum frame? Just bare aluminum. And I think it must've had its landing gear on and tires. And so it was basically just a shell sitting on its gear. And I was like, God dang, dude, they are tearing that thing down to nothing. And then building it back up completely.
Down to bare metal.
It was incredible, dude.
And now they take the 9-degree frame off, which is before when I first came in, we were always taught like 9-degree frame is the backbone of the 65. Yeah. You damage 9-degree frame, this airframe is trash.
Yeah, I've heard that too, yeah.
Now at ALC, you know, the big brain engineers there figured out how to like reverse engineer and build a super strong, sturdy 9-degree frame. So that helped our SLEP program, our service life extension program, so we can get the 65 through the sundown period as forecasted. I mean, just
which is
super humbling.
20.
I don't know. I looked at a force layout and I feel like it's kind of like hopes and dreams after like 2030, 2035 maybe.
Okay. But
I think I saw some numbers in there with NCR in like the late 2030s, early 2040s.
Yeah. I can totally see that too. Like, so let's take the transition for example, right? So 65 units turn 60s.
Sure.
And you throw all those helicopters at a unit, right? NCR, Hitron, something like that. It kind of makes sense. You know, you've got all these extra spare parts. I mean, I'm no engineer, but I feel like
if you have
a surplus of things to throw at it, maybe you can keep it around a little longer.
Yeah, certainly.
I don't know.
That's awesome.
Cool. Yeah. Doing good things up there. Thanks, ALC.
Yeah. Shout out to them.
Yeah. What's your guys' favorite thing in the 65 Echo?
I would probably say being able to shoot GPS approaches only because I had a situation. It's probably like my fourth flight in Atlantic City and it was a duty day. So it's on a Saturday. I'm with Anders Manley, who's also a phenomenal human being. We both same amount of time in the Echo and we go out, we're doing our trainer RT2 with the contract boat, which is a short flight for Atlantic City people. And weather's okay. It's marginal, but March timeframe, you can get that marine layer come rolling in. Sometimes it'll get socked in at the airport or sometimes you'll get socked in offshore. So Anders out there crushing his hoisting and we look down, we've got 16 minutes to our 400-pound bingo. We got plenty of time. I'm being an amazing pilot monitoring and I'm watching like a fog layer starting to roll in. I'm checking weather back home. I'm like, ooh, all right. This is starting to look a little sketch. We finish up and we're like, okay, let's use this Echo our nav capability and shoot a GPS approach. Like they teach us at T-Course, right? So we're all jacked to do this. We get up with approach. We punch in around like 2000 feet, I want to say offshore. And then this is where things started to hit the fan. We took off with a GPS one already failed. We accepted that. We were like, it's not a big deal. We got the second. We got other alternate means if we need it.
Yeah.
Well, as we are getting radar vectors for ILS, we elected to do the ILS. And we're about, I don't know, getting shoved all the way out towards Philly, which is not norm for Atlantic City approach control. They're very, very good. Probably one of the best I've ever experienced. And it's just like, these are the longest vectors ever. You know, you're starting to look at your fuel and like, okay, all right, like we could do this.
Mm-hmm.
Well, we get about 2 miles from the final approach fix and I'm like not getting any indications for snowflake coming in. I'm like, well, okay. Like then I see the red flag. I'm like, oh, that's not good. And then even Anders is over there and he's like, we're both hitting our toggling through our switches. We're like, what the hell is going on? Right. Yeah. And then like, we're getting the tone though. So we're like, we know it's working. And then we just elected to wave it off and ask approach for the RNAV at that point. That was the only thing we could do because VOR was jacked too. And then we looked down cause we were like, can we get short vectors this time for fuel? And they're like, Rogers 6.5, whatever we were.
Mm-hmm.
Are you declaring minimum fuel? And we both just simultaneously looked down and we're like, it was like a minute to 300 pound big over. Like, yes, yeah. I firm.
Yep.
And then that's when like things started hitting the fan, right? So then Anders looks at me because then they took that seriously. Short vectors, you got it. And it was like a lot quicker than we were expecting.
You better start plugging things in.
And he goes, do you think you could load the RNAV approach quicker than me? And I was like, Anders, I literally graduated a week after you from Team Corey. Do you think I could do that?
You're fresher out of training.
Yeah.
He was like, yes. So we're both just fumbling effing around. Finally, we were able to get it to work, but we broke out. I mean, that approach got us to 475 was the lowest we can get. We broke out at 400 feet.
Ooh.
Landed with 130 pounds of fuel.
Oh my God.
So that was a like, you kiss the ground type thing. Like, yeah. Thank you, baby Jesus.
Yeah.
But having the RNAV, because that was the only thing we'd be able to do because GPS one was jacked.
Yeah.
So all we had was a GPS two and then ILS. We ended up finding out was an ILS receiver failure.
Okay.
But you just start to that appreciation. We're like, oh man, if we were in the Delta,
yeah,
you would have been screwed. That would have been a nightmare. Yep. Like we would have had to set up a catch or something and get us in an opportunity to try to land and get fuel. But
yeah, exactly. Yeah,
that would be my,
dude, that's what's up.
My opinion.
I like that one. I do like RNAV approaches.
Once I can figure out how to do it. Yeah, it's good.
So nice. Just plug it in, you know, go flight plan. Let it fly it for you.
Yeah, exactly.
You know,
take your, all the hard work out of it.
Yeah. Brian,
geez, since she took RNAVs, I guess I gotta pick something else.
Like, I'm torn. Nice tires, I guess.
Tires are rad. Yeah. Geez.
Four iPads in front of you.
I love the screens. Yeah. The ergonomic, scan on the glass cockpit. I think having everything super close by, not having to do that while hoisting at night, making that left head movement to look at your FLI when doing swimmers in July with no wind.
Yep.
It's nice having the torque tape right there next to your peripherals.
It literally is the closest thing that you could see.
That's perfect. They did that for me, I think. Maybe. Dude,
idiot proof.
Thanks for the folks that, you know, designed the Echo, I guess.
Yeah, for sure. Oh, there's so many things I love about it. Three-dimensional flight director, the RNAV capability. The foot switch is awesome.
Okay.
I hated that remote switch having to lift your arm
you
up.
You didn't like that?
Sometimes
I'll reach for it.
Me too. It is a weird thing. I'm like, nothing here. No, there's nothing there.
Rub the side, I guess.
I'm just patting her on the side here. Yeah.
Yeah, having the three-dimensional flight director is pretty rad. Like you said, you know, being able to plan an entire flight profile and have it fully coupled the entire time from damn near after takeoff to, you know, T-hub capture if you really want to be fancy. I mean,
I know it.
It's way hands-off, super
you
safe.
Pull up, you know, above 25 feet and hit go around and
you're gone.
Let the flight director take over from there if you wanted to.
Jesus, take the wheel.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah, she's awesome, dude. I love it. Love her.
Yeah.
And the redundancy. That's a good one.
So many redundancies.
Yeah.
Which was great. So I was going through AC syllabus in 2000 when Miami got the Echoes. So it leveled the playing field for all the IPs.
Yes.
I hope none of them are listening, but so there were a lot of like old ass Delta dudes that were like, oh, this new whiz bang
pissed
fame,
about it.
This
yeah.
is crap, whatever. So they're out doing, you know, AC instrument check or SAR procedures flight or what have you. Like, well, why don't you show me how you like to do this? I'm like, oh, sick, dude. I flew a T6. I'm familiar with some CAS and glass. Yeah, this is fine with me.
Yep.
So it really made it like IP conceding. Like, yeah, that was standard. Okay, let's keep moving.
It really was the great equalizer too.
It was, you know,
oh, those circuit breakers that you like to pull in the past, yeah, they're no longer
that,
there.
Buddy.
Yeah,
and, super redundant now.
It doesn't make
huh?
sense to pull them anymore, does it? Yeah, dude.
Oh, that's been great.
How about you, Nick?
Huge radar fan. Yeah.
Radar is
Radar fantasy.
Stupid good.
You know, and I was looking it up. I was nerding out, but I was trying to learn more about it. But it's a, you know, it's a commercially available product, right? That they can put on, you know, these offshore anything, helicopters yeah. and stuff. And it's, which is kind of a nice selling point because it's not, you know, like a MIL-TAC, blah, 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 whatever, you know, some military type equipment that, you know, I don't know, sometimes it's junk, you know what I mean? But it's great. My favorite thing, I like the color coding for the weather radar.
Oh, for sure.
And then, you know, the actual, like the GMAP color coding, that makes sense. Like, was it like the magenta or pink or whatever is like your strongest returns and you're like confident, cool, that's something. But the fact that you can scale down to a half a mile and then see objects close off the nose for like when you're shooting like a no shit approach to the water when weather's bad.
Yeah.
And that's nice. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So I'll take folks out and you guys know those little pillars, those old pillars that they have in the water out there in Mobile Bay.
Sure. Yep.
They're like the little, I don't know. They look like telephone poles that stick out. Yeah, about 5 feet above.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, I'll do a quick demonstration. We'll get into a, you know, 100-foot slow pass or 50-foot or something like that. And sure enough, that little radar picks them up and it paints them like little candlesticks. And I'm like, see, dudes,
dang.
This thing will, you know,
I'm stealing that.
It'll keep you out of trouble, you know, as long as you tune it correct and you know you get your gain and your tilt set up. But a huge radar fan. I love that thing.
Okay, so you don't do auto gain for that.
No, I like tweaking it, man. Okay. And maybe that's a Delta thing.
Yeah.
Right. Cause of the Delta you're
always like, tweaking.
You're like a DJ, you know what I mean? If you can picture that, but yeah, that's my favorite thing.
Nice.
Yeah.
Interesting choice.
Yeah, for sure.
Respect.
Yeah.
I
that was not good.
That's a like, weird one.
Not even top 10.
Didn't expect that. No,
I know. Well, really weird, but anywho,
you know, it'd be interesting now that we're complete with this Echo transition. Now we're going to see a lot more folks going 60s, like maybe in, I don't know, next year or so, once there's more of a data pool, you can get people on the podcast to kind of talk about that transition, the experience, because eventually we're all going to be there. So just something to put on the radar in the future.
Let's do it.
Pun intended, put on the radar. Right? Oh. Fun fact, I think the 60 has the same radar, Nick. The Primus 700, is it? Primus 7000?
It could be 7000, I
7000,
think.
7000, yeah, there you go. If you do your transition,
you'll know exactly what you're doing.
You'll be able to nerd out with them.
Don't tell them about React. You know what React stands for?
No.
Bonus points. It's like some fancy term. To like
I'm just going to say that I know it.
Past of what you're looking for.
Radar, echo, attenuation.
Oh, come on. Big brains over here.
I can't remember.
He's an engineer, technique. Though.
There you go.
Yeah, you knew. All right.
I forgot.
You really nerd out on the radar.
Yeah. Well, if you ask somebody and they don't know and then you tell them, they're like, wow, he knows a lot about the radar.
So next briefing item.
If that's the only thing you know about the radar is what React stands for. Yeah, you passed, bud.
Yeah, exactly.
Day one or one complete.
Dude, if someone dropped that on me in a brief, we'd be walking like, all right, let's go. Let's go do our pre-flight.
Yeah. Big brains over here. Let's get you that designation letter early, I guess. Well, sweet. Well, that about does it for time today, guys.
Yeah, this was good. We didn't even talk about what we were drinking.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah. We saved it to the end.
And I, again, just like last time, thanks for supplying the brewskis.
Well, I need to just go to Costco and fill the fridge up because it's still extremely sad and I don't like any of our options that were in there. So I went and got, if you live on the Eastern Shore like I do, I know you guys don't, but
Midtown.
Yeah, Midtown Cruiser.
Midtown, yep. East Bay Life. We have the Fair Hope Brewery Company. We're drinking the cheap sunglasses. Let me describe the can because that's what I did last time. Looks like we got a pelican wearing cheap sunglasses. With the price tag still on it and they're rocking the 90s fanny pack there.
Yeah, I was gonna say, don't forget about the fanny pack and then look at the little like what do they call those, the probation monitors that's on the
house arrest.
He's been tagged.
Yeah
that's what we got rolling today,
dude. Shout out to Fairhope Brewery.
Shout out to them. Yeah,
maybe we can get them to make a Coast Guard beer
actually. So quick side note, they just opened a brewery in Mobile called Wingman.
Yes. Oh, it's in Midtown, Leo. We know.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Well, F me. I'll just walk out now.
You Eastern Shore folk.
I know. Oh, too bougie for y'all.
When you're ready to come over here and test the waters, we'll have you down for the Wingman brewery.
You know what? They sell this there. So it's like I didn't even leave the Eastern Shore.
Exactly. It's like a smooth transition over to Mobile from the Eastern Shore. You know what I mean?
It's like I didn't even leave.
Yeah.
embarrassed to admit I've yet to make it to Wingman, considering Cheese Cottage and Old Majestic used to be my spot. Yeah, it's where Old Majestic used to be.
Yeah. Yep.
I'm just stuck on Braided River. I'm sorry.
Yeah.
You're a Braided River guy? I haven't been there yet.
It's the best.
Yeah.
I have to go.
I'm a fan of both. I like all things, but the new brewery, Wingman, is pretty solid.
Put on the list.
Give it a check. Sweet. Any parting words, Brian? Words of wisdom, perhaps?
Oh my gosh. I feel like my whole spiel was just constant lesson learned and words of wisdom for it.
You've been great, dude.
I guess just focus on the basics.
Okay.
Take care of yourself, take care of others. One of the other things I get on pulpits about is like mental health, recognizing that in other people and not being embarrassed to admit that, hey, you need a timeout, you need to take a knee, or you need to seek some sort of help from an outside source.
Yeah.
A huge proponent of it. I myself am a participant in it and I love it. And I don't think I'd be where I am today without a little bit of extra help to get you through some of those stressful times in life.
That's what's up, dude.
So yeah, absolutely. I think taking care of yourself and taking care of others. I think that's it, man.
I love it.
Yep, for sure.
Yeah. You've been great, man.
I loved it.
You should come back. I know. I was hoping Mark was going to be here so we can have a little engineering powwow.
Mark was nervous. He didn't want to talk about stuff.
Yeah, I won't get into that. I tried so hard, but he couldn't. This is the first time he's left before like 3 o'clock in like a year and a half as well. So
yeah, he works really hard.
Yeah, he's a hard worker.
Yeah, he was nervous.
Yeah, that's okay. Well, we appreciate you coming on, sharing certainly your experiences and, enlisted to officer. We talked about, course, engineering things and our favorite components on the 65, but
a little bit of New Orleans, our favorite city.
Gosh, I know, man. Can't thank you enough, dude.
Love you guys.
Rode your coattails.
Nice.
Love you, Brian.
Collaborative effort, dude.
It's been great, dude.
Heck yeah.
Got anything, Aaliyah?
Nah, stay great, everybody. Hit us up if you want to get on the show and talk about whatever it is you want to talk about, aviation maybe related. Bring beer. Or not. I'll bring beer. You can always count on me.
Yeah.
Thank you, Leah.
Yeah, of course. But I think everyone has stories and especially cases, and we all can learn from it. So don't be shy. Come on the show. Don't be like Mark and run away from us.
Yeah.
Don't be
We're
a
nice,
Mark.
I all promise.
Right. That's the theme of the day. Don't be like Mark. Just kidding, Mark. We love you. Even though you don't listen to this podcast. All right, dudes. See you next time.
Later. We say goodbye.